Let's take our Bibles, turn to Psalm 20. Psalm 20. While you're turning there today, I am reminded that we live in a fallen world and that every day in this world we fight battles. Sometimes we fight battles on a physical front. We are facing health issues, maybe a doctor's diagnosis, maybe a sudden illness, and the battles that we fight physically have a way of affecting us spiritually. It is something to go in to fight when you're in your own strength and when you're a young man who is able to take on any kind of sickness, any kind of health. But when you face a real health dilemma that sets you back, it has a way of stunning you and causing your head to spin. This past 2 weeks ago, I clicked a major milestone in my life. At Camp Deer Lake, it was explained to me by the campers that age 37 is the official age that you hit when you're considered old. And I realized I had passed that milestone many, many years. And whenever I told the campers that I had turned 50 at camp on Wednesday, they looked at me and they just couldn't fathom that number because it just seemed so large and so old. And I couldn't fathom that number. And it just seemed to be that when I turned 50, someone gave me a case of COVID for my birthday. And I enjoyed it so much that I decided to get Melina a case for our anniversary. And she is struggling with that today. And sweetie, we are praying for you. And I think about just the physical setbacks of our health. How it has a way of causing us to get sidetracked, sidelined. Maybe it's our financial struggles that we go to fight against every day. The struggles of just not having enough money in the bank to get our bills paid. Or maybe we have enough money in the bank and we feel like we're A-okay and everything is good. I was reminded this week, though, that I saw that the gas prices are coming down and we are seeing a record turnaround in our economy. Jobs are up and life is good. And even though it costs more to go to the grocery store and we don't have money in our bank account, it just seems to be the report that we're getting from Washington is that life is good once again. And it doesn't feel that way. It feels like a battle, just trying to get through each and every day. But I'm not just talking about physical battles or financial battles. I'm not talking about relationship battles today. We're going to look at spiritual battles, how our battles are fought and how our battles are won. 2 weeks ago when I began working on this message, there was a story in the news that really piqued my attention. Maybe I had heard about it, maybe you have heard about it, but it was so easy to forget the story of the ghost army. Do you know the story of our ghost army that we had in our armed forces? During World War II, right after Normandy, there was a group of men that went over with our troops once the beaches of Normandy were stormed. And the entire purpose of the ghost army was to go and to set up false defenses. I don't know if you can see in the image behind me very clearly what we're looking at. Do you know what that is? It's not what you think it is. It's actually an inflatable tank. The ghost army went and they set up inflatable fake weapons in their fake encampments. I think there was some 1,100 men that made this division up. And they went into France, and their purpose for fighting in the war was to throw the enemy off by setting out fake inflatable weapons. I do not want to go to war with an inflatable tank. Actually, I would like to fight against an inflatable tank, but I do not want to go onto the battlefield with an inflatable tank because it takes one little briar to take it down. The ghost army used a battlefield deception technique, and the way they did that was through setting up these inflatable tanks and inflatable artillery. They had trucks with loudspeakers on it that broadcast the noise of soldiers in an encampment or the sound of artillery and heavy equipment on the move. They also got on the radio waves and sent out fake reports so that the enemy could receive these fake reports and be deceived as to the location of our troops. The whole purpose of the Ghost Army was to pretend to be an army trenching in and establishing a camp, or to misdirect the enemy from where it was that our real troops were going to fight. The amazing makeup and composition of this Ghost Army, it's not people you think would normally be on a battlefield. Artists, actors, and engineers. People who had skill in building impromptu sets. People who had the ability to paint and to mock up or use camouflage to throw off the enemy. People who are great at faking and pretending. And the Ghost Army was recently recognized, and there were Medal of Honor awards given out to the men who fought in the Ghost Army. And their purpose for being on the battlefield was to deceive the enemy in order to gain the advantage. Their battlefield techniques: misdirection, wrong direction. They would often go in a different direction than the troops were moving. And because of the sound that was broadcast through the loudspeaker vehicles, the armies would, and the townsfolk, they could hear some 15 miles away. That's how loud these loudspeakers were. You would hear it if they were close by. And so defenses would be set up to protect because they would hear the sound of an approaching army. The resources that they used were completely fake, and there was no protection involved or given through an inflatable tank. And there was a sense of false strength that was projected to the enemy. It was a moment in time army that worked once. But you know, today the enemy is going to use infrared, and they'll use satellite reports over the area to look to see if they're really looking at something inflatable or something real, genuine. They're going to beef up their intelligence reports because they've been tricked once. They're not going to fall prey to that once. So it was a strategy that worked once, though a handful of times perhaps throughout human history. But the remarkable victory that came from a Ghost Army that did not fight, but rather brought confusion and deception, lulled the enemy into thinking they knew where the battle was. And it lulled the enemy to be convinced that they were stronger than they actually are. And that's the conflict that you and I face when we step onto the battlefield of life each and every day. We enter the fight convinced that we are actually stronger than we really are. We can fight with a false confidence in our own strength. It's important to be prepared for the fight. It's important to be ready for the fight. And sometimes the way that we assure ourselves that we are ready for the fight is we think that we're strong enough. We sometimes build a false confidence in our resources. Like I said at the beginning, our health, how much money we have in the bank, the security of our job, the relationships that we have in our life. And if there's anything that I have seen over the course of this summer, how the enemy has a way of convincing us that we're stronger than we are by getting us to trust in our resources, thinking that we've got enough. Every time I call a repairman here at the church, I'll call him, and his response, the words that they use to me are startling and striking. "You do know that this is broken," are the words that they use. And I want to bite my tongue because I will say very reverently, "Yes, that's why I called you. Because it's broken, and I need your help. And I will try my best to fix a lot. Sometimes my best makes a worse problem than not doing anything at all." And how do we keep that straight on the battlefield when our strength is not enough, when our resources are not enough? And this morning, I want to ask you this question: are battles really won without horsepower? Look with me at Psalm 20, verses 1 through 9, Psalm of David. The Lord hear thee in the day of trouble. The name of the God of Jacob defend thee. Send thee help from the sanctuary and strengthen thee out of Zion. Remember all thy offerings and accept thy burnt sacrifice. Selah. Grant thee according to thine own heart and fulfill all thy counsel. We will rejoice in thy salvation, and in the name of our God, we will set up our banners. The Lord fulfill all thy petitions. Now I know that the Lord saveth his anointed. He will hear him from his holy heaven with the saving strength of his right hand. Some trust in chariots and some in horses, but we will remember the name of the Lord our God. They are brought down and fallen, but we are risen and stand upright. Save, Lord, let the King hear us when we call. Would you join me in a word of prayer as we ask the Lord to bless our time? Lord Jesus, we come to you today as we fight our battles. Lord, I pray today that you would give us liberation from trying to fight in our own strength or by our own resources. Lord, I pray that you would give us a healthy focus of how it is and why it is that we fight. For whose honor and whose glory do we live each and every day? And Lord, I pray this week as we step back onto the battlefield, maybe even this afternoon, once we leave this place, the war begins again. I pray, Lord, for your grace to meet us on the field and to carry us through victory. We ask these things in your name. Amen. This morning, I want to look at answering the question how battles are won and how battles are lost. It's equally important of knowing the difference between the two. And I don't think there's anyone in here this morning that would say, you know what, I want to learn how to be a loser. I want to lose on the battlefield. I want to be a winner. And to do this, I would like us to go to a story from David's own life as we see how David and Israel approached the battlefield against chariots and horses, two of the most awesome and devastating weapons of war in the ancient world. Do you realize that it wasn't until about the end or the beginning of World War II that horses were retired from the battlefield? Poland tried to meet the German forces with their horses, and they didn't hold up very quickly against heavy artillery. But in David's day, that heavy artillery would be long, long in the imaginations of some inventor. For David and Israel to stand up against an army of horses and chariots, we are going to see what the Lord did for them in that battle. And it starts off, before you ever set foot on the battlefield, you need to learn to read the battlefield. In 2 Samuel chapter 10, verses 1 through 4, and it came to pass that after this, that the king of the children of Ammon died, and Hanun his son reigned in his stead. Then said David, I will show kindness unto Hanun, the son of Nahash, and his father showed kindness unto me. And David sent to comfort him by the hand of his servants for his father, and David's servants came into the land of the children of Ammon. And the princes of the children of Ammon said unto Hanun their lord, Thinkest thou that David doth honor thy father, that he has sent comforters unto thee? Hath not David rather sent his servants unto thee to search the city and to spy it out and to overthrow it? Wherefore Hanun took David's servants, and he shaved off one half of their beards, and he cut off their garments in the middle, even to the buttocks, and he sent them away. Now that is an act of humiliation, to take David's men, to make a mockery of their facial hair, to send them home literally bare as they ran them away, humiliated. David's intentions were to go to show Hanun kindness on behalf of his father. And the advice that Hanun gets is that David is coming to overthrow the children of Ammon. And Hanun misreads David's intent. The counsel that he gets is bad. His response is bad. And I want to ask you, just from your understanding of military strategies, when a king comes to show you kindness and you repay his kindness by shaving off half of the men's beards, cutting off their garments and sending them home naked, do you think that would be a great way to show your appreciation for the king's kindness? Absolutely not. But Haman's thinking about terms in the beginning of his reign. He's thinking about the way he goes to meet David. And the way he's going to do that is by inserting his power. He's got to make a name for himself as a king so that his people will fall behind him. And I want you to realize that for David, too, at this point in his reign, fairly early, even though he had made a name for himself as a mighty man of Saul, David still had a lot of battles that he would fight, externally and internally. And for Hanan to misread what was happening here, Hanan's asserting his own strength is what leads to the provocation of war. He misreads the battlefield. David comes in kindness, and Hanan responds with humiliation. Hanan's folly is that he starts out with this false report of an attack, this imminent. And this false report is going to lead him into fight a battle with the wrong objective. When David comes to meet this new king, David is coming with a spirit of kindness, an act of kindness. And the king misreads it and prepares for war. It's important for us to keep our facts straight when we go to fight on the battlefields of life. Because sometimes we don't have all of the information. Sometimes we have just a little snippet. Or we will hear a little bit of something, maybe a little bit of truth, but not having the whole story, and we will jump to conclusions. And we will have a fight on our hands made by our own mess because we did not have all the facts together before we jump into the fight. So battles are won by reading the battlefield right. And then we see also that you need to wait for the right moment to fight. We end with David's men being returned in verse 4, but in 2 Samuel chapter 10, verse 5, and when they told it unto David, he sent to meet them because the men were greatly ashamed. Admittedly, it was embarrassing the way their backsides were handed to them as they marched back home to the king. And the king says to them, tarry at Jericho until your beards be grown, and then return. I have a question for you. How long does it take for a beard to grow? Quite a while. I went a couple of days without shaving this past week, and I was embarrassed at how white my beard was, because it told on me how old I am. And I would shave because I didn't want that reminder of how old I am and how long I have walked on this planet. And then it was that thought that the Lord sent to me, hey, be glad that you're still walking on the planet. And I like that, Lord. Yes, yes. And David tells his men, before you go back to battle, let your beards grow back. How long is that, a day? Mm-mm. Several weeks, probably. Could be several months before David and his men will respond to the king Hanan. But you and I don't always pause when we're in the middle of a provocation. Because our pride has a way of hurting and putting us into the fight long before we're ready. Our sense of pride has a way of getting us involved and upping the scale and acting before we've even thought through, even though we may have read the battlefield rightly. When it comes to our sense of pride, there is something to say, something to be said about how wounded pride will put you into the battle before you're ready. And if you're fighting because your pride is wounded, you're not fighting with the right objective. I want to point out the difference between offense and defense on the battlefield. Offense acts. They are the ones who take the battle to the enemy. The defense is the one that reacts, that defends the ground. And for David here, is he acting offensively or defensively in waiting? He's building a strategy. He's not jumping into the battle defensively yet, though he's preparing his men to let their beards grow back, to go back and meet the enemy. And then we look again at 2 Samuel chapter 10. We see that we do not fight alone. Read the battlefield. Do not enter the fight before you're ready. And number 3, do not fight alone. Look with me at verse 9. And when Joab saw that the front of the battle was against them, before him and behind, he chose all the choice men of Israel and put them in array against the Syrians. And the rest of the people he delivered into the hand of Abishai, his brother, that he might put them in the array against the children of Ammon. And he said, if the Syrians be too strong for me, then thou shalt help me. But if the children of Ammon be too strong for thee, then I will come and help thee. Be of good courage, and let us play the men for our people and for the cities of our God, and the Lord do that which seemeth him good. And Joab drew nigh, and the people that were with him, unto the battle against the Syrians, say it with me, and they fled before him. How you fight and the one you fight will motivate you in the heat of battle. And for Joab makes a decision. I'm going to take our armies and our choice men, and we're going to fight on two different fronts. And wherever the greatest need is, that's where the attention is going to go. If I'm losing, I want you to come, Abishai. And if you are losing, I'm going to come help you. We are going to stand together because we are fighting for the men of Israel. We are fighting for the cities of Israel. We are fighting in the name of the Lord. Why are Israel even in the battle in the first place? Because Hunan thinks that his throne is being challenged by David. So he's provoked war with the king in humiliating David's men and the Israelites. And David and Israel are preparing for battle because they realize what is at stake. And sometimes in the heat of battle, sometimes when we're on the battlefield, we forget why it is that we're even fighting. We know that we are just supposed to fight because that's what we do. We don't give up. When you get a tough health diagnosis, you want to fight in your own strength because you want to show everyone that you're better than that. But I'll tell you what, there's something to be said about getting older. And the strength of these bugs, it has a way of knocking you on your feet, or at least getting you to the place where you feel like David's men after Hanun had run them out of the city, defenseless and humiliated. Maybe it is through your job, or maybe it's through your relationships, that a problem just springs up. And you know that you got to fight, but you forget why it is that you're fighting. And the one that you are fighting for will motivate you in the heat of battle. Fourth, resources do not guarantee victory. Look with me at verse 15. And when the Syrians saw that they were smitten before Israel, they gathered themselves together. And Hadazar sent and brought up the Syrians that were beyond the river, and they came unto Helam. And Shobach, the captain of the host of Hadazar, went before them. And when it was told of David, he gathered all Israel together and passed over Jordan and came to Helam. And the Syrians set themselves in array against David and fought with him. And the Syrians fled before Israel. And David slew the men of 700 chariots of the Syrians and 40,000 horsemen and smote Shobach, the captain of the host, who died there. I'm just going to point out the math. 40,701 men died in battle. 40,701 men with superior resources than Israel. fighting on the other side of the river. And when the kings, and when all the kings that were servants of Hadadezer saw that they were smitten before Israel, they made peace with Israel and served them. So the Syrians feared to help the children of Ammon anymore. You have here something changing on the battlefield. David goes to war, and his men stand up against the chariots and the horses of the Syrians. And I want to tell you a little bit about fighting against a horse or a chariot, even though I have never, ever done that before. It's like taking a knife to a gunfight. You're not prepared to stand up against a horse or a chariot because of the superior armaments. Oftentimes on horseback, the cavalry would work with archery, arrows, or spears, volleying projectiles at you long before they arrive at you. And once they get to you, they trample over you when you're standing on your feet on the ground. Chariots, armaments, they can just roll right over you and past you, turn around and run right past you again. To stand up against a horse and a chariot when you're on your foot is not a great way to go into battle. But the battle that day is the Lord's. And Israel sees something happen. The alliance that had been formed with the children of Ammon begins to crumble. The alliance that the Syrians had in standing up against Israel crumbles. And the kings bow down to David and pledge to serve David and Israel. And the fighting stops that day because of the humiliation on the battlefield. Have you ever been on the losing side? That's humiliating enough. But the humiliation that we're looking at is the humiliation that comes through victory. For David and his men, remember, early on, were sent that message from the king of the children of Ammon by mocking him and sending him home, misreading David's gesture of kindness. They're keeping their head on straight and staying focused in the fight. Israel goes to battle against an enemy that's set on proving a point. And unless you think that, well, the secret to Israel standing up against the Syrians, do you remember what Joab, what his strategy was? He pulls out the choice men. The choice. You know, armies are made up of the best, and then those people like me, the guy who's picked last on the playground. It is the guys who are the fierce warriors and then the other guys who just make up the ranks. As I look back at the history of modern warfare, I'm glad that we do not enter into battles like the way we used to, even during our Revolutionary War, where two armies line up and they shoot at one another, and then they take another step closer together and they shoot at one another, and then as men fall, the army that has the most men standing after they come face to face, they're the ones that go into hand-in-hand combat, and they have a way of whittling themselves down. I would not want to fight in a battle like that. And then we move ahead to fast forward to today, where we have a guerrilla-type warfare, where the enemy is so entrenched and hidden, you never know where you can, who you can trust and where you can turn. And the enemy, it seems to be all around you, and even though it may just be one, because they are hidden and because they're embedded, you live in fear. Keeping your head on straight, keeping your perspective and knowing who you are, why it is that you fight, for whom you fight, is what will lead to your victory in the battle. Secondly, as we wind down the message this morning, I'd like to look at how battles are lost. And for this, we just look at what happened with the Syrians. Trusting that your resources are enough to win is a guarantee of losing a battle. How will this conflict play out in the Middle East? How will this conflict play out over in Russia and the Ukraine? Is it going to be through the one that just seems to hold out the longest? The one that has the most resources? That theory is being tested right now, and I do not have an oracle's eye to know how the battle is going. Nor do I have the attention that I sat down and studied the strategies or the objectives. And sometimes we make armchair assessments. Sometimes we just hear enough and we try to decide enough, thinking that we are so far away from the battle that it's not ever going to come to our front and we don't have to worry about it because we are ready. We've got enough resources. Remember Psalm 20, verses 1 through 9, verse 7? Some trust in chariots and some trust in horses. And the statement that David makes in Psalm 20, verse 7, is a statement that's rather striking. Because in the battlefield, when you're trusting in your chariots, when you're trusting in your horses, you know that a foot soldier is no match for a horse. Horsepower overpowers foot power. The problem with relying and trusting in your chariots and trusting in your horses is that sometimes you forget about the care that's needed for your resources. Horses need attention. They need hay. They need water. They need rest. In the case of going up against an enemy, they need heavy armament on them to protect them from an enemy on foot that's prepared for a fight against a horse. When they don't have a horse. But horses need attention. And when you are taking care of your horses, when you're taking care of your equipment, it has a way of keeping you off of the battlefield because someone has got to do the work of taking care of the horses. And chariots need service. 2 weeks ago, whenever I began this message, I took my vehicle to the dealer to get it serviced. I was having a problem with some sound in the engine, and I asked them to look at it, and they were going to do some diagnostics work in my vehicle. Said it shouldn't take very long. There's a problem. They lost the paperwork, and it got shuffled there, and it was stuck on the lot. Calling in these days, you know, doesn't do any good. You don't get anybody, or you just wait indefinitely. So I went to the dealer to see about getting my vehicle back because they had it for going on a week and a half. I had been at Camp Deer Lake, wasn't really missing it because I was in the throes of battle at Deer Lake. But when I went to pick up my vehicle, I met with a service manager who tells me that they haven't had any luck troubleshooting my vehicle. Now, I can take that at face value and mean they tried and they didn't have any luck figuring out the problem was. But his answer was actually worse than that. In the week and a half, they hadn't tried to diagnose the problem. It had just sat there on the lot. And they were happy to give me my vehicle back without any answer. So the dealer makes a recommendation to me. Before you bring this in again, try this. Put some better fuel in your tank. See if that doesn't help. And do you know what? Better fuel in my tank took care of the problem. And do you know what? Better fuel in the tank created a problem because it's very expensive. And so I can live with the noise and have some noise of coins in my pocket, or I can invest and I can fill my tank with something different. I'm at that crossroads right now. I don't know what seems better. Keeping the money in my pocket or keeping the sound out of and the performance up of my vehicle. Right now, the performance is more important to me, but I know that my resources will wind down, and I'll think to myself, okay, it's time to go back to the cheap stuff. Because vehicles and chariots need attention, and they draw on your resources too. But in battle, there's no equal in David's day to an army with a chariot and with horses. And David says some trust in chariots, some trust in horses, but we will remember the name of our Lord. You have to remember who we're talking about here. Israel did not need the false hope of going up against the chariots and the horses, or taking on the enemy's tactics for going into battle. When it came to Israel in the land, as they came across the inhabitants of the land, they were to wipe out the inhabitants of the land. They were to destroy their resources so they couldn't rise up and drag Israel back down. And get this. Thinking that I can fight in my own strength is what resting on horses, horsepower, and chariot power will get to you. It will lead you to think that I can fight in my own strength, like the Syrians did. But for Israel, Israel had a history. Israel had a storied history of 400 years of slavery. Israel wasn't known for their military might. It was the Lord that led them out of Egypt, led them out across the Red Sea, led them through the wilderness. And to say, Lord, we've got this. You brought us this far and we can take it from here. That's like fighting with the enemy's bravado. We're good enough. We've got everything that we need. Battles are also lost when you forget your limitation. Israel had spent 400 years as slaves before they arrived in the Promised Land. And I want to call to your attention that slaves learn to follow. Soldiers learn to fight. In Israel's time as slaves, do you think she learned to fight for Pharaoh? She learned to build buildings and take care of the city walls for Pharaoh. She learned to serve Pharaoh. What's the one problem that Israel has once she gets outside of Egypt? Wanting to take the lead again. It was easier to follow the oppressive boot of Pharaoh than it was to follow the Lord and not complain and murmur, to stay faithful to Him. Those 40 years in the desert, in the wilderness, when the Lord provides for them, and then He leads them into the Promised Land. Israel is facing a great challenge of that false bravado, forgetting her limitations. She could. And the great lie that you and I face each and every day is thinking ourselves to be stronger than we actually are when we stand up to fight our battles. You want to know something? I'm not strong enough to fight. I'm not strong enough to stay in the fight. This little heart of mine, it's closely aligned to those squirrels that I hate. Yeah, I've got a squirrel heart. I said it. And thinking that I don't is a way to deceive myself and lead me into thinking that I can stand in my own strength. The last way that we're going to see this morning, that battles are lost when you forget the source of your strength. In Deuteronomy chapter 20, verses 1 through 4, look at the Lord's instructions for Israel. When thou goest out to battle against thine enemies, and seest horses and chariots and a people more than thou, be not afraid of them. For the Lord thy God is with thee, which brought thee up out of the land of Egypt. And it shall be that when ye are come nigh into the battle, that the priest shall approach and speak unto the people, and shall say unto them, Hear, O Israel, ye approach this day into the battle against your enemies. Let not your hearts faint, fear not, and do not tremble, neither be ye terrified because of them. For the Lord your God is he that goeth with you to fight for you against your enemies to save you. Church, we need to hear that today. It's the Lord that goes before us to fight our enemies in His battle. The problem with trusting in our resources, our horses, our chariots, is we begin to confuse the difference of resources with blessings. Because it's a very popular theology today to think that blessing equals prosperity, blessing equals an abundance. And it does. It does entail that. But if our goal is to be blessed with banks that are busting, busting because they're full and not because they're run out of money, because they're flush with cash, because our pantries are well stocked, or that our health holds up, we confuse our resources with our sense of blessing. Do you know why enemies step onto the battlefield? They step on the battlefield to protect their blessings, which are their resources. Maybe it's their national boundaries. Maybe it's a supply of oil or supply of grain. Maybe it's the sense of pride between a leader and his enemy. The reason why enemies go to fight on the battlefield is because they identify their blessings in light of their resources. We either have or we have not. And for Israel to stand up against chariots and horses, for you and I to step out on the battlefield tomorrow when we are ill-equipped and ill-prepared for the fight that we have before us, the real battle is following the Lord when our reserves are empty. Because as long as you've got more men than they've got chariots and horses, you can step up to the fight. As long as things are going well, the economy's good, as long as our job is secure, as long as that we face no threats, we have this false sense of confidence in going to the battlefield. We are just prepared for the fight. But what happens when those reserves get depleted? I don't know about you, but I tend to fight my battles when I realize I don't have anything left to fight with. That seems to be the way I fight my battles here recently. That it's not how much I have, but I notice how little I have in stepping up to the fight. And I think that's a healthy perspective, not saying that I have the right perspective, because sometimes it breaks my faith to say, Lord, I can't get through this because I don't have enough. But what if, knowing your limitations are where the Lord wants us in the battle that we fight? Because God accomplishes more when we are broken than we are blessed. And for Israel to go to battle against the children of Ammon and against the Syrians, yeah, they were humiliated, and yeah, they were ashamed. But they kept their heads on straight in the battle. And they didn't send necessarily all of their men to the battle, just the choice men. It's because the Lord was going to fight for her. And the Lord gave her the victory. And we see some 40,701 enemy fall that day on the battlefield. God accomplishes more when we are broken than when we are blessed. So we need to decide who it is that we fight and how we fight our battles. Are we fighting against the enemy who wants more of our resources? Are we fighting by faith alone? Because trusting in chariots and trusting in horses means that, you know what, Lord, you've given me everything that I need to fight this, and this is good. I'm ready for the battle. But when you step back and you read the battlefield, you realize that the battle is a lot bigger and a lot more heated than we realize. There's a lot more at stake. There are challenges that you and I will face this week that will test our faith, whether it is in our resources or in our Savior. And knowing that when we step onto the battlefield, we fight on two fronts each day. We fight the fight before us with the enemy, and we fight the fight inside of us with ourselves. Where am I going to put my trust? Where am I going to put my strength and my hope, in my ability, in my resources, or in my God? This morning, as we answer that question, how are battles lost by horsepower? Yes, battles are lost by horsepower alone. In order to step onto the fight and keep our head on straight in the fight, it's going to be a battle that we fight in our heart. We've got to know our enemy. Sometimes our enemy is that person who wants our resources. That's the one that wants to take from us what God has given to us. Sometimes that enemy is right here. The one that thinks, I'm strong enough. I'm good enough. I can do this in my own strength. We need to know the battlefield, the arena in which we fight. Get to have the full survey. And I think just great to start out every one of our battles knowing, you know what? Probably not going to win this because I'm not good enough and I'm not strong enough. Lord, I need you leading me. So when the doctor comes in and says, you need to sit down, I've got something bad I need to tell you, you're prepared for the fight. When your boss comes and hands you a pink slip because the economy is tanked, you say, Lord, I need you. Maybe it's a relationship that breaks, a fight that springs up between you and another family member. Know that the battlefield is fought between those two forces, actually three, you, the enemy, and the Lord. And I want to be on the Lord's side. So you got to know your battlefield in order to know that, and then stay in the fight. Yeah, surrendering in humility is where we find our peace. But the Lord has called us to the fight each and every day. So stay in the fight and stay in the right fight. Our prayer is this: Lord, keep me straight on the difference between real blessings and false strength.